Chapter 11. We had another prayer meeting that night, and every night thereafter. Each evening, after the sun's flamboyant departure left us feeling more alone in a world that suddenly lost all color, we devoted perhaps an hour to our informal service. There was a comfort in passing our burden to someone bigger than we in this empty vastness. Further, the common devotion drew us together, since it seemed that we no longer depended entirely upon each other, but could appeal simultaneously to a fourth that we three held equally in reverence. After our halting prayers, neither Jean nor I was scholarly in formal religion, and Tony could pray only in Polish, we developed naturally the fellowship period, familiar to those who have attended Protestant Sunday school. We sang some popular songs a time or two. I couldn't remember any except old ones. I hadn't been to a dance, except occasionally, in 12 or 15 years, and popular songs go away from me. The songs that I knew, the boys had never heard. The more recent ones that they could sing, I couldn't. However, we managed to get together on a few, and that gave us a lift. It was later that I came to realize how little we knew about the Bible. One night after our prayer meeting, I told a little Bible story. Appropriately, it was the miracle of the loaves and fishes. The boys were tickled with it. In my youth, I'd been brought up in a denomination of the church that holds regular Sunday school, so I drew upon a long memory. Of course, the stories were in my own improvised words. I hadn't been to church for many years, so it's easy to imagine how good I was at recalling the stories I had learned as a youngster. I hadn't been inside a civilian church since 1923, when I was back home after my first cruise. Aboard ship, the chapel services, which I occasionally attended, included everything but Bible stories. My religious training had been such that I could now recall all the favorite stories of the scriptures, but nowhere near verbatim. Jean recalled a number of stories, but couldn't tell them. He would think of a story, and then it would be up to me to tell it. Tony had never heard any of these things before. In his church, all the services were in Polish, or Latin. The best-known biblical tales were all new to him. He begged me every night to tell him more and more. Well, I didn't want to tell him everything I knew in one night, so each evening I'd tell one story. That went on until the end. I found my recollections of the Bible very useful in the last week or 10 days, when we were all exhibiting a tendency to brood over our position. One of my hazy parables would snap us out of our depression and start a flood of discussion in which our dismal outlook was momentarily forgotten. Many a time I wished a preacher or someone well-versed in Scripture were present. The wording I used would certainly shock a Bible student. Nightfall brought a quieting in the boat, such as the force of lifelong habit. The night was cooler and more treacherous, and when the moon was down and clouds covered the stars, it had a darkness that few landsmen know. Sundown brought a lull in conversation. The prayer meeting gave us a sense of having an evening, but then our lids grew heavy, and we remembered bitterly that somewhere folks were crawling into bed. In such reflections we fell silent, each of us with his own thoughts, which I imagine came close to a pattern. Jean took the watch. Tony lay down in the bottom again and tried to sleep. I idly checked the constellations and tried to keep my thoughts impersonal by going over and over various navigational calculations regarding our position and probable drift. We sat thus for some time, our thoughts accompanied by the monotonous lapping of small waves against the raft. Several times a sense of something changed, somehow, tried to disturb my reverie. Finally, moved by some automatic sense, I looked up and discovered that the stars had disappeared. At the same time, I noted a subtle difference in the atmosphere. Then I became conscious of a growing sound, soft, like the wind rustling palm fronds, but with a higher tempo and steadier. In another few seconds, the first big drops hit my head and shoulders, and I immediately roused Tony. We were having another rain. Our arrangements for catching water, once rehearsed, were like a well-drilled manual. The shower thudded upon us with violent fury, then was as quickly gone. Our system of making every pliable inch of fabric into a vessel, augmenting the water thus caught by wringing out the highly absorbent rags from our shorts, gave us all a good drink this time. When the brief rain was over, we again disrobed and wrung our clothes. To us, this was almost like having a bath. The refreshment braced us mentally, and we chatted fairly merrily for perhaps an hour until the heavy night began to press again and stilled us. The wind had lightened when Gene's second watch came around. "Don't seem as if we're moving," he said as he settled on the forward thwart. "Hard to tell," I agreed sleepily. I was wishing for a bunk. Gene wet his finger and held it up to test the wind. "Hardly ain't no breeze at all," he said. He leaned over the side and dipped his hand in the water to see if he could feel any drift. His fingers had no sooner got into the water than he let out an agonized yell. Instantly, as if he had touched something scalding hot, he whipped his arm upward, high. A gray shape flung itself from his hand and went into the water on the opposite side of the boat with such a splash that a small spray plopped back into the raft. Gene was holding his wrist by the other hand and was moaning softly. "My God, what's the matter?" I asked. "I think a shark bit me," he said. Tony was up now. "Geez, is it bleeding?" he asked, deeply concerned. "Yes," Gene said. It was obvious that Gene was badly frightened, as indeed we all were. In the darkness, we could not see how badly he was bleeding. Of course, under the circumstances, Gene believed his injury was worse than it actually was, and it was bad enough indeed to cause concern. Fortunately, I had a handkerchief. We bound his fingers, and the bleeding soon subsided. It was plain that Gene had been badly bitten by something. We agreed that it must have been a shark. I was impatient for the first light of dawn so I could examine the finger closely. When morning finally arrived, we saw that the wound had bled surprisingly little, considering the severity of the cuts. The hand was badly lacerated. Tooth marks showed plainly on the fingers. The shark, if shark it was, had raked down his index finger, cutting almost completely through the nail in two places. The root of the nail was so thoroughly mangled that it was plain he would lose the entire nail eventually. I began to realize how badly we needed some sort of medical kit.